Well, hey there. It's been a bit, and we are now in 2017. Glad you are back with me. Let me tell you where we're headed for the next 12 episodes. The next 12 episodes, we're going to be looking at what it means to be as developed as you can be in your leadership. 12 words for 12 episodes. Some of you that are listening to this are in our year-long follow-up coaching program. So there's only two types of coaching that I do. It's the 12 weeks, the deepest one, and then this year-long leadership program. And some of you are just listening in. So if you're going through the coaching, you'll get the much more in-depth application follow-up conversations. If you're listening in just to the podcast and going along with it, it's going to challenge you to get to the edge, grow you like crazy, and that's what we're here to do. So here's what we're going to do. For the first month, the first word we're going to talk about is audacious. If you're going to develop into the best leader you can, you're going to be an audacious person. And I'm applying this audacious to grow people. We're not just talking about charisma. We're not just talking about having a vision and going after it. We're talking about audaciously believing you can impact, grow people and help them. And here's how we're going to do this. We're going to frame this conversation this way. We're going to talk about 9 specific actions to help people grow. So before I get into that, just to lay the groundwork here, I don't know if you've ever thought about it this way or not, but as you interact with others, and this is people that you are side by side with on a team, this is possibly as a parent, loved ones, friends, for sure we're going to apply this as a person who leads or manages others, but it doesn't matter. Everything you do is training people. Everything you do can help them become better and grow and make their lives better. And as you interact with others, if you're not aware of this, then you're going to become lazy with other people. Everything you do is not only helping others and training them and growing them. Everything you do is also shaping you and training you and growing you. So a thought for you here. You're either helping lives become better or you're wasting time. And I want to help you do that. And so I've taken like the complexity of what it means to interact with others and the issues that you'll face and just boiled it down to 9 skills. 9 skills that you could say make up a great manager of others, but 9 skills that shape up an audacious person who says, "Yeah, I want to help others grow." Now, there's no way I can give adequate time to all 9 of these. When I do live training on this, it's a day-long event. So that being said, I'm giving an overview, and in giving this overview, I'm going to give you the guts of it, and then let you really take it and see how much it applies in your own context as you work out the simplicity of it. Now, as we dive into this and these 9 skills, you're going to see how many places you've been poorly managed. You've been poorly interacted with. People haven't trained you very well. And this is not about getting mad at what happened. It's about learning how to do it better, okay? So here it is, 9 actions. Number 1, the first action that you want to learn to take as a great manager of others, a person who's audacious to grow people. First action is this. And now, this is an introspective question. The other 8 are hard and fast skills. This is an introspective question, but here's the first habit. First skill, first action. Lead them. Now, I've already been talking about what it means to be audacious to grow people. So I know I've kind of introduced this idea already, but here's how you're going to lead them. You're going to ask yourself this question. What are you avoiding or tolerating in their performance, in who they are? I mean, what happens is we get locked up as leaders in managing others and giving direction. And I see this happen all the time. We either bury the issue until we get so frustrated we blow up and go crazy, right? This happens as team leaders. This happens as parents. This happens in love relationships. We either bury it till we blow up, or we're super uptight, rigid, and always expecting an exacting performance from others. I had a friend that actually, this was a person that was a friend, but also a coach to me years ago, said, we want to learn to not be accommodating leaders nor dictating leaders, but gracious, principle-centered leaders. And the way to get there is to start by wrestling with this question. What are you avoiding or tolerating? Listen, if you lead others, you will get burned. It requires vulnerability. You're going to put yourself out there, right? It doesn't matter whether you're training people how to wait on a table and serve in a restaurant well, your teenager to clean their room, the new associate that you just promoted to the partner level, whatever is happening, there are going to be challenges. And in the past, you have seen poor management. You've seen toleration of poor management or avoidance of good management. And I know it feels overwhelming to think about tackling the issues that are in front of you to improve how you're leading others or managing others in the team culture. But just stop right here for a second. I want you to do this. I want you to take out a piece of paper. And I've heard of numerous other people that have done this, so this isn't a groundbreaking exercise. But just take out a piece of paper and draw a line down the middle. You got two columns on each side. And I want you on the left-hand column to write everything that makes up a great team member, a great person you'd want to do life with, a great person who would manage you, maybe. Just write all the qualities that you can think of. Now, if you need to hit pause, do that, and stream of consciousness, write them all out. After you've written them all out, cross out all the ones that aren't directly related to attitude, that are actually like a talent. And I want you to move those over to the right-hand column. So then what you should only have on the left-hand column is attitude characteristics. And then on the right-hand column, talent characteristics. Isn't that crazy? How many more are in the attitude category? Because attitude makes a huge difference. It is the deciding difference. And as you start thinking about how you manage and lead others, I want you to start thinking about what you tolerate in others, and maybe in yourself, and maybe in your skill level, and maybe in their skill level. And it's not just about performance. It's also about attitude. So that's the first action of a great manager. They do not tolerate or avoid the next step. They don't tolerate bad performance or avoid the next step. Number two, second action of a great manager, a great audacious person who believes they can help others grow. Here it is. They give feedback that is heard. See, here's the problem for a lot of people. They are wondering if they're doing a good job. They're curious if they are actually delivering in a way that's expected. If you are not giving feedback to others, helping them know where they're doing well and where they're not doing well, trust me, they are filling in the blanks, and they are oftentimes filling them in a way that does not match up with your vision or the way that you would like them to be performing. So you got to learn to give feedback. But you've got to give feedback that's heard. See, it's one thing to give feedback. It's another to actually give feedback that's heard. I love using this example, Michael Scott on The Office, and I'm going to botch some of this up. But in one situation, he is being told by his supervisor, hey, buddy, if you keep doing that, you're going to get fired. And he's in the hallway in front of the video camera speaking to it and saying, did you hear what just happened in there? He called me buddy. So many people do not hear what you're actually saying. So I'm going to teach you how to do it right now, how to give feedback that's heard. You want to eat, don't lecture. Now let me explain what eat means. You want to eat, don't lecture. When I'm in a parenting moment or when I'm in a moment with a team member where I'm frustrated, once I go into lecture mode, I'm not being heard. Everything's being filtered through their fear. So what do I mean by eat? I'm not one for cheesy, acronyms, but occasionally they work. So we're going to do it here. The second action of a great manager, they give feedback that's heard. How do they do it? They eat. They encourage people. They hold them accountable to the vision, and they train them. Encourage, accountable, train. In fact, if I'm leading a team, I'm asking them, are you eating with your team members every week? I want them to eat with their team members every week. Encourage, accountable, train. Now, let's break these down. It's been said that, you know, if you're going to give feedback that's heard, you got to use the sandwich method. Give the positive, give the negative, then give the positive. Trust me, that doesn't work anymore. People hear the encouragement coming, and they immediately brace for the negative. And then they're going to hear the negative through whatever their fear is. Oh, my gosh, they don't want me on the team. I'm not going to be taken care of here. I need to start finding another place to go. You know, whatever it is, there's a bunch of – you can go back to the first 12 episodes of this podcast and learn what people hear when they hear through their fear. But if you're going to give feedback that's heard, don't sandwich method it. That doesn't work anymore. Give appropriate encouragement in the moment. You don't have to do it every time. It's about your tone. If the tone of who you are is encouraging what's going well, awesome. If you need to have a conversation where you hold them accountable to the values of your organization, to the vision of what you're doing, to how you do things as a family, whatever it is, then it can be an accountability-based conversation. Hey, I'm so glad you're on the team. I think it's awesome how you do this with clients. But when we go out and make this kind of call, we don't do that this way. That doesn't fit with who we are, and here's why. So I've encouraged you and I've held you accountable. Now, ideally, you're going to train, and you're going to say, but we do it this way. If you're constantly on the lookout for the things that you can encourage, for the things that you can hold accountable to the vision, for the things that you can train, let me tell you what happens. You gain credibility. See, a lot of people, when they're being led by others, are constantly losing credibility, or the leader is losing credibility because they tend to only bring energy into a space that they're feeling ramped up, hyped up, nervous, afraid, or frustrated, or scared. They're not being consistent. You want your words to have weight. How do they have weight? Consistently give feedback that's heard. Encourage people where it's appropriate. Hold them accountable to the vision of the organization and the values. And if you don't have those, you need to figure that out, which we'll get into that in a little bit. And you train them. How do you want it done? Show them. Oftentimes when I'm doing like live workshops on this stuff, we'll do this and have people act it out and have them do it in exaggerated ways. Because the more managers learn to do it with exaggerated movements, they kind of settle into a more natural rhythm of it to their personality. So, and if they're extroverted, you need to bring a little bit more energy, exchange of personality, going, yes, you can do it. And if they're introverted, dial it down some. I'm not talking about who the leader is, who the manager is. The manager needs to be adaptable. I'm talking about the person being led or managed. If they're extroverted or introverted, you meet them where they are. And research has shown extroverted need the more expressive leadership. Introverted, you got to dial it down more because it's overwhelming to their senses. So pay attention to these things, all right? Number three, I know I'm flying, but you got this. We want to help you grow. We're going to apply it. For those of you that are in the coaching, we're going to go deeper with it. But number three, third action of a great manager. They navigate tough conversations well. They're not afraid to have tough conversations. They know that tough conversations are a part of helping move people forward. So this is a specific, deeper application of EAT for the accountable part. If you're going to hold someone accountable, how do you do it? You're going to have tough conversations with them. Now, how do you have tough conversations? I've got one more. I said acronym earlier. I'm in acrostic. One more acrostic for you. CPR. It's from the book Crucial Conversations. I can't make this better, so I'm just going to use what's there. That is the best I've seen it said. You do CPR. How do you navigate tough conversations? CPR. Content, pattern, relationship. See, most gloss over reality and glaring problems. They wait until they bury it, till they blow up, or they're neurotic micromanagers. We're talking about striking a beautiful tension of being a leader who has a vision and is passionate about it, but is also a good human being, okay? And if you're going to be that kind of leader, that kind of person, that good human being, you want to learn to navigate tough conversations by stepping into the conversation before it's become a worse problem. How do you do that? Content pattern relationship. It's three levels. So if I am managing you and you are supposed to be in at 9 a.m. and you keep showing up at 9:20 a.m. and that creates a problem because then you're not ready to be there to serve the client when they show up at 9:05. I'm going to sit you down and we're going to talk about it. And I'm going to say, hey, here's the thing. I noticed that on Tuesday, and it's Wednesday because we want to address this quickly, or maybe it's later in the day Tuesday, and say, hey, this morning you came in and I noticed you were here at 9:05 or 9:20. I know that doesn't seem like a big deal, but it is because we want to be ready to go to serve people when they come in the door. So let's just talk about the content of that. I need you to be here at 9. Next day, they're at 9. Awesome. Next day they're at 9. Awesome. Next day they're at, or more like 8:50, but you get what I'm saying. Next day they slide back into their habit and they show up late. So you talk to them and say, hey, I addressed the content of this with you. That's the C. It's happened twice now. It's a pattern. That's the P, pattern, CPR. It's happened twice now. It's a pattern. I need this to not happen unless it's an extenuating circumstance, which you can communicate with me and let me know. I need you to be here when you said you'll be here. Because see, if the pattern continues, and this is the R, the relationship changes, content pattern relationship. We make managing others, leading others way too complicated. Content pattern relationship. I'm going to address the content. If that happens again, we're going to call it a pattern, and we're going to try to figure out what's happening. Why don't you hear what I'm saying? What's going on that's causing this miscommunication? Is there an extenuating circumstance in your life? Hey, let's be good human beings, and maybe there's something they're embarrassed to tell you. But hey, if you're not communicating with me and helping me know something's wrong, the pattern continues, the relationship has to change. So that's the R. Fourth action of a great manager. They get the team or the team members fully engaged. They get the team or the team members fully engaged. Now, how do you do that? How do you get the team fully engaged? What's the exercise here? This is counterintuitive because most people, when they're approaching this, and if I say to them, hey, get your team fully engaged, what do they think? I got to go in there. It's the locker room. I got to be the coach. I got to give the rousing speech. I got to go, 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 and increase the intensity until we're hyped out of our minds and we charge the field. Absolutely not. That is not what you do. It's been proven through multiple studies. You can research books like The Talent Code that people are engaged when they've gotten feedback. If it's something they're passionate about already, they're going to be fully engaged when they get feedback to correct the small mistake they're making that's blocking up their full engagement. Here's what I mean. It's too easy for you to go into a space where you try to make up for a lack of clarity with an increased intensity. That's the coach in the locker room. Just give the intense speech. No, we want to refer back to the EAT. And I said, remember, encourage, accountable, train. Training is giving feedback on the smallest of movements that are going to help them be ready to deliver in the moment. Let me give an example. We're going to keep fleshing this out to make it clear. The UCLA coach, very famous, John Wooden, said, it's known that he would train players to put on their socks. Now, can you imagine high-level athletes coming in to sit down with him being trained how to put on their socks? You know, some team members communicated with their faces out of an insecurity. Hey, what's he going to be doing to teach me this? You may get some of those faces as you do training. Just get ready. But the reason that he trained them on how to put on their socks and lace their shoes was because socks that weren't put on right caused blisters. See, most people think when they read these stories about him that he was just trying to power up and get control of them. No, he wasn't trying to do that. He was trying to teach them how to do it because socks poorly put on create blisters. What's the big deal about blisters? Blisters cause missed shots. Missed shots mean lost games. So he was training them in the smallest of movements. So let's say there's a team member that you can't define it with a lot of pinpoint accuracy, but you're just not happy with their engagement. Okay? And it's not necessarily something that you can give them feedback on, a very small movement that they need to do to be fully engaged. Here is what you do. Here's how you apply this. Sit them down and go, look, I feel like your engagement isn't at the level it could be. Okay, now don't stop there. I'd like to see you increase your engagement by 30%. Or maybe it's a 30% increase in speed, you know, whatever the specific job that they have. Now, is it easy to perfectly define what a 30% increase looks like? No. But at least you're giving a target to go after. For too many people, they're wondering if they're doing a good job. And if you're going to be a great manager, you want to get your team fully engaged. How do you do that? You shrink the action you're asking them to take on to a small step, or you correct the small mistake that is blocking up that engagement. So you don't just tell them, hey, when you take that call with the client, make sure that they feel relaxed. That's not enough. That's good, but you've got to get more precise. Don't interrupt them and give a pleasant tone. You see how that's much more precise? So you want to constantly push yourself, if you're going to be a great manager, leader of others, to shrink down what you're training them in to the smallest amount of feedback or the smallest step. So then it's not about these big, long speeches in the locker room. World-class coaching, which is also like managing, is about very nuanced feedback in the moment. That's the training. And that's the kind of leader you can be. All right, fifth action of an audacious person who believes they can grow people and help them change, that builds credibility, that people look back and go, I'm so thankful I worked with them or for them. Fifth action, develop people. Don't just discipline them. Here's what I mean. What happens for a lot of people when something isn't happening like they want, they're going to go into this mode where they just want to get them back in line. Well, that's a horrible way to think about it. Depending on where you are, for some of you, this may be hard to relate to, but I want to give you a good way to think about that isn't horrible. If you're a parent, you know it's like, I got to get them back in line. That's going to screw up the relationship. If you've not been a parent and you've received parenting, you can identify with this. It's not about this, I got to get them back in line. It's about how can I unblock their best behavior? How can I unblock us having the best relationship and connecting? So here's what you want to do. When you are in a space that you need to really help people get to the edge of their abilities, you're not just disciplining and trying to stop bad performance or bad behavior. You want to replace it with them being the best that they can be, with them being at the edge of their abilities, growing like crazy. Then you've got to start to think about your interactions with them this way. As you refer to certain parts of their behavior that need to be different or change or get better, or a change you're making in systems and you're going to have to ask them to do things in a different way, you want to have a framework to continually refer back to. Now, again, let me just say this. The fifth action of a great manager, they develop people. They don't just discipline them, all right? It's about getting them to the edge of their abilities and helping them be as effective as possible. What's the exercise here? How do you do that? Take every interaction with them as you are training them, as you are giving them these small things that change, the most precise feedback possible, always tie it back to the framework, the vision, and the values of what it means to be a part of the organization or to be a good leader. Think about it this way. What is your favorite way you've been led or managed by others? What did you enjoy the most? What are your favorite parts about the brand for the company that you're a part of or the business or the team? All of those make up vision and values for what your organization can be about. Now, as the leader, as the manager of the team, if you don't have a framework, you've got to develop one. This framework, I mean, I've heard simple ones that are just really clear from, they've got to be passionate to grow in their career. They've got to be servant-oriented as a team member, and they've got to be, always ready to learn a different way of doing things, a better way. Those are three more general, simplistic ones. Now what's better is when you've got specific values you can articulate that are unique to the culture of your organization that reflect stories that you can tell over and over and over. So one of the things that, I'll do with organizations is help them get in the guts of who they are, what are the unique things that they can build around as the storytelling and the expression of their culture and in their organization. And then that's the framework that they can refer back to. So, but anyway, what you want to do with this action is every interaction, reinforce the framework. When in doubt, teach it. Go back to it. Jack Welch, when he was leader of GE, talked about how, when you're casting vision, when you're teaching the framework, you'll feel like you're going to puke. You've said it so many times, and they're just now hearing it. This is a reality that you've got to make peace with. Listen, I know that small actions repeated, the fundamentals of something might seem boring. But when you learn to fall in love with rhythms and routines, it'll take you where you want to go. Rhythms and routines trump intentions. So if you're listening to this and you're like, I want to be the kind of person that develops people, that doesn't just discipline them, then for you, the exercise here is this. Get a framework and then refer back to it all the time. Help people in the moment learn to think about the situation like you think about it. Now, the best way to teach a framework so that it's memorable and not forgotten, I love to refer to the movie 8 Mile. I don't know if you've seen the movie or not, but at the end when Eminem has the rap battle, and before the other guy can call out all the vulnerable parts of who Eminem is, he calls it out for himself first. This, you teaching the framework and referring back to whatever the framework of your values are and what you expect of your team members, again, you gotta define it and you gotta communicate it, okay? Your teaching of it, when you share the times you've made mistakes, it's gonna give them permission to grow and learn and not have to feel like they've got to be perfect and hide when they're not. You want them to come to you when a mistake is made. You want them to be in an open conversation with you. So share your wins, share your losses, develop people, don't just discipline them. Sixth action of a great manager, they delegate effectively. They delegate effectively. Delegation is way simpler than most people make it. So here's the exercise with this action. Take anything that you need to delegate right now, and it's about the role, the task, and the deadline. That's it. Those are the three component pieces of effective delegation. What's somebody's role? What's the task as a part of that role? What's the deadline? So I don't always hit the role with somebody. If they need to be encouraged or reminded or have the vision cast in a fresh way or a new way or a old way, but just, they need to hear it again. Hey, this is your role. I'm so glad you're in this role. I need you to run with this task, and I need you to get it done by this point. Most people don't delegate very effectively. I like to use this example. How many wives on the weekend ask their husbands to clean the garage, but it never happens? Hey, honey. The garage is kind of messy. Honey, do you think you could clean the garage? Ineffective delegation. Here's how it needs to work. Husband, garage cleaned by Saturday dinner. Of course, I'm having some fun with that, but you get the point. What you need to be able to do when you delegate something is define clearly what's the role, what's the task, what's the deadline. Now, kind of an advanced application of this is when you give the task, you need to make sure they know what your intent is. So you could say to them, hey, I need you to find the top 10% of our client base and look at who we haven't worked with in the last 6 months, and get me on the phone with all of them that you can, or whatever the task is that you're delegating. Now, you've given the task, but you haven't said why you want it done. So that person goes to execute the task, and then maybe they get a little pushy on the phone with a client because they're trying to fulfill what you asked. This is where the nuance of this is huge. What's the intent of what you're asking them to do? Maybe you just want the data and the meeting set up, but you need to say it this way. Hey, I want you to take the 10% of our top clients, find who we haven't worked with in the last 3 to 6 months, and then for everyone that's available in the next week, get me an appointment with them. If you can't get them on the phone with me, I want you just to send them a gift and let them know we appreciate them. Ooh, now you're training them because you're giving them the small nuances. Okay, we can go on. Seventh action of a great manager. Use your time, don't waste it. Use your time, don't waste it. Now, there's a ton that could be said about time management, way more than I can say in this podcast because we're just doing this high level right now, right? That's the skill. Use your time, don't waste it. What's the exercise here? Well, the exercise is you need to build your ideal week. As a leader of others, you need to build your ideal week and make sure it has components in it for you to connect with them, for you to know their lives, for you to relationally be a part of them, for you to shut the door and do strategy. I mean, I can go on and on about all this. Another key component, for you to have your morning routine dialed in or your evening routine or whatever sets you up to be at your best for the day. But what happens for a lot of managers, because they don't commit with clarity to the next step, resistance creeps in and they end up wasting a lot of time as a way of, and this is going to go back to action one, avoiding the very next step that they need to be taking. Now, some of you are in a place where maybe you're managing a team of others, but you're not the leader of the organization, so you can't just shut the door and say, okay, I got to do this. One of the things that I have people do is make a fun sign, right? This is John's Get It Done Zone. And it's going to sound cheesy, but just hang with me for a second. This is so-and-so's creative work zone. And tape it to your back. Put it on your desk and point to it when people try to engage you over small stuff. And just have it set up that from 8:30 to 9:30 every morning, that's when you crush it with deep focus or whatever your timing is. I'm telling you, this works like crazy. I've had to do it in an office setting. I've done it at my house. I've done so many different ways of, you know, cardoning off my time and saying, this is what I've got to do right now, and I'm going to use it well. So an action of a great manager, they really know how to make their time count. Now, if you want more on this, just go back to through the podcast and search Build Your Ideal Week, because it's a faulty exercise to try to build your ideal day. You'll be stressed. You'll stress your team out. That's not going to help anybody. Eighth action of a great manager. Eighth action of a great manager. They are smooth with accountability. You've noticed I've referred back to EAT, encourage, accountable, train. They are smooth with accountability. Now, that's the action. What's the exercise here? How are you smooth with accountability? Here it is. You use agendas as the bad guy. Another way of saying it is you use your meetings well. If that's a planned 30-minute meeting, a planned 10-minute meeting, or a happenstance 5-minute meeting in the hallway, which if you're having a ton of hallway meetings, there's some systems to be addressed because then your energy is going to start going sideways fast. You want to do a couple of things as a manager. You want to have as few effective meetings as possible. And most people don't know how to have an effective meeting, so they have too many. And I'm going to teach you right now how to have an effective meeting. If you're going through the coaching, when we chat, we'll set up your meeting schedules and make sure they're tight and make sure they are as effective as possible. But here it is. You're going to take your meetings and break them down into three pieces: inform, discuss, act. And in your meetings, there's an exchange of information. What, you know, as the manager to the team, what do you need to be informed of? Maybe the team needs to inform you. What are the things we need to discuss? Oh, we're in the discuss section now. So we're talking about it, and then we're in the act section. Now, the act is just the delegation, role, task, deadline. If you're going to be an effective person with meetings, let me break this down for you. Take a piece of paper, just draw three columns on it. Inform, discuss, act. Week one, you inform them. The second week or the second meeting, you discuss it. The third, you act. We've had time now to process this for a couple weeks. What happens for a lot of people in meetings, it's just this spaghetti-style conversation around all these issues. No, we're going to inform. Maybe sometimes we go straight to act because the issue is urgent. You know, obviously, a wise manager, a savvy leader is going to take a system and adopt it and apply it and make it their own. But when you have something that people know what to expect in the meetings, this is the beautiful part. They will show up and deliver, because when you get to act, here's what you do. The third category, the actions we're going to take, you wrote down who was going to do what by when at the last meeting. And now the agenda is the bad guy, and you just ask about it. Oh, Susie, you were going to have this done by Tuesday. How'd that go? You're just reading through it. They know you're going to read through it. And when stuff comes up that you need to do some training, you repeat the framework. You just go back to it. So inform, discuss, act. Smooth accountability is about making your meetings count by using the agenda as the bad guy. It's so much easier, so much clearer. There's nothing gray. You get to be an inspiring manager, leader, good human, and still help people grow through accountability. You know the benefit of having to report to somebody for something. There's just that little bit of extra motivation. Don't take that away. It's helpful, and it helps others grow. All right. Now, ninth action makes you a great manager. Now, all of these today are under just the one concept we're talking about, that you're an audacious person who actually believes you can help people grow. This is the first leadership skill we're talking about. So we'll have 11 more episodes after this for the other 11 leadership skills. But as an audacious person who helps people grow, you are continually developing your effectiveness at these nine actions. Here's the ninth one. Here's the skill. You consistently improve teamwork. You know, teams go through phases. I've talked to you about this before. It's been researched. Forming, storming, norming, performing. You know, the team forms, then it goes through conflict, it storms, then it hits a consistent quality norm, and then it gets to its highest level of performing. So when you are leading a team, you want to constantly be improving teamwork. And here's the thing that I want you to understand. This is how you do it, okay? You celebrate the extraordinary. You got to make a big deal about it. You don't celebrate the ordinary. You don't celebrate the consistent or what's expected. I mean, you can do it in certain ways, but you really want to make the extraordinary stand out. Here's what I mean. I was in a cafe. I may have told you all this story. I can't remember, so I'll be fast. I was in a cafe, and I'm hosting a guy, right? I'm asking him to meet me there. And I watch as one of the owners of this cafe gets over to the side with somebody, and they're talking, and the customer wants to check out, and the cash register is like 5 feet away on another part of the counter. And the customer's confused, thinking he's supposed to check out at this place. And I watched as this owner just moved the cash register to the person. Now, if that person is on a team with me, later on that day in the meeting a month from now, when we gather as a team, whenever, I am going to celebrate that action. I mean, at home, I expect my kids, it's a part of their chores, to help with the dishes and the laundry. And sometimes, you know, we've got just an extra amount of chores to do. And one's being kind of chill and lazy and not responding fast. But one jumps up and goes, "I'll help, Dad." The number of times I've been like, "Hey, you can have this quarter in my pocket." No, a quarter wouldn't do anything. I find little ways to reward them and celebrate the extraordinary. So you don't have to do like big over-the-top things, but if you're going to be the kind of person that is a great manager, that's an audacious person who actually believes they can grow people, an audacious person who actually believes that people will look back at working with you and say, "I learned so much from that person," then you want to learn to recognize what stands out from the framework, the vision and the values that you've set out. And when they go over and above, you let them know how much you appreciate that and how awesome they've done. Now, you can see how we could spend a ton of time on these 9 actions. If you're in the coaching, you'll get a sheet with these, and we're going to go through those in the call. We're going to talk through it. But for everyone else, apply, apply, apply. These are your fundamentals. Learn to put your socks on well with these, and you will actually be able to have more of a drama-free business. You want to have plenty of capacity to grow what you're doing and to have vision and to respond to the needs of loved ones around you. You don't want the majority of your life eaten up with business drama, and it doesn't have to be. Apply these actions, reap the rewards, be an audacious person to help people grow. And before I go real quick, some of you may not get the weekly email I sent out, I want you to know I started a project, and you can be a part of it for a little bit more time. I think it's got a couple weeks left. TheStuckBook.com. TheStuckBook.com. Go there. Check it out. Oh, so excited about it. Have a great rest of the day. Peace.